director extraordinaire, Michael Mann. Look up his work. Incredible. He's going to join us from Italy, where he's working on the Ferrari movie. First, there's Geico. Do you own? Do you rent your home? Sure you do. And it can be hard work. You know what's easy? Bundling your policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you have so much to do already around your home. Why not make it easy? Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see just how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com.
For just $25, you get wine and gifts. Ace's favorite stuff or products from ACS. Every single month, you get the drink you choose. It's hard to beat. Stuff and booze. Adam's Monthly Nut. Adam's Monthly Nut.
People of Earth, it's time for another installment of Adam's Monthly Nut. This month, we got things that will take care of your body, soul, and scrotum. Like a sample pack of Tame the Beast Nut Butter. A blend with Tuck Everlasting anti-aging and anti-chafing ingredients that will keep your sack high and tight. We've also got the great Dano's Seasoning, who will make each and every kind of meat taste even better, whether it's beef, pork, or your fellow man. Dano's is low sodium and no sugar, so even Vinny will approve. We've also got Nude Mints to not only freshen your breath, but your gut biome too. These incredible products and a bottle of your choice can be found at CorollaDrinks.com for only $25. So prep your mailbox. A new month of Adam's Monthly Nut has arrived.
All right, Michael Mann is joining us all the way from Italy. He has a book out, Heat 2, a novel. It's available now on Amazon or wherever you find finer books. It's his first novel. We all know Michael Mann as a writer, director, Heat, Ali, Last of the Mohicans, and now working on Ferrari in Italy. So, you know, I'm going to have a lot of questions about that. And one of my favorites that a lot of people don't know about, which is Manhunter, which the original Hannibal Lecter was launched in. Good to speak to you again, Michael.
Good to see you.
Yeah. I have many questions about the book and many questions about everything, but a question that came to mind as I was talking to my son last night, who's 16. I said, oh, you got to see Manhunter. That's the original Hannibal Lecter, Brian Cox, just hits it out of the ballpark. And I was thinking about that scene that I always think about where the Bengal tiger is sedated and the blind woman is dragging her hand across it. Yeah. And I, it's a scene that is just etched into my brain because you guys have to go see it if you haven't seen it. But it's this 1,000-pound Bengal tiger, which has been sedated, and a blind woman is just dragging her hands across the teeth. And it's beautifully shot, but it's also eerie and kind of bizarre and scary. How did that come about?
It came about. It's one of my favorite scenes, too, that I've done. It came about and because I wanted three things to happen simultaneously, and they're all stacked one on top of the other, and they're all hopefully affecting you at 100, each one 100%. Dolarhyde, who's the serial killer in Manhunter, is attracted to the blind woman who works with them because she can't see him. And he believes he is. So he feels confident enough to connect with her, understands that because she's blind, she's compensated with other sensory, other senses compensate. And so he understands how meaningful it'd be to her to feel the breath of this tiger and to be able to actually pet a sedated tiger. And at the same time, in his mind, he is that predator. He is the tiger. And at the same time, he's also fantasizing being with her, and we're within her experience. So there are all of those are operating simultaneously. And because she can't see, she doesn't see him behind her in this fever dream of the situation he created.
I'm glad that scene is one of your favorites, because of all the scenes and all the movies and so much work and such, you know, over decades, that one is always just etched in my brain. I didn't even get all the nuance and subtlety of it, because I saw it when I was 23 in my apartment in North Hollywood on a rented videotape, but I just never forgot it. So nice job. The novel, this is your first novel after all these years of writing so many screenplays. Why a novel?
Because first of all, these characters never stopped being alive to me. And kind of in the way I work this, you know, I do a lot of firsthand research and building these characters for the actors, myself, in the writing, and you wind up knowing everything about them. They're based on real people, but then you go even further, and so they're fully alive in my imagination and continue to be so. And then as I move through life and have different experiences, and I'm, say, researching something quite different than Batam across from Singapore, and I'm on a boat in the Strait of Malacca, and what if Krisha Hurlis, the Val Kilmer character, was here? And what if, you know, we start thinking along these lines of what, you know, we left him. The novel begins one day after the end of the movie Heat. And the last one left alive is Krisha Hurlis. He's wounded, delirious, and is desperate to get out of Los Angeles. That's the beginning. And it moves both backwards in time and then forwards into what his life's going to become and his evolution of being the same kind of fully integrated, mature man that, say, the Pacino character or the De Niro character were in Heat. And as well as a bunch of other characters. And so, you know, you start imagining the world as the world evolves, and the kind of 19th century bandito activities they had holding up banks evolves into much more sophisticated forms of globalized criminal activity, and that's the world that Krisha Hurlis really starts to innovate within. So that becomes very exciting. So it's kind of, you know, you got the character with you, and then you move through life, and, you know, so it then becomes a big canvas, and that's what I wanted to explore in the novel.
Yeah, that the movie Heat, I think first time Pacino and De Niro were together on screen. Is you bringing them together? Is that correct?
Right. It's the first time they were together in the same scene. And it was interesting to me because I felt that when you're with De Niro, you want what De Niro wants. When you're with Hannah, Al's character, you want what he wants. And the two are diametrically opposed, but you want them both 100%. So you want Hannah to intercept and...
Normally, it's the bad guys and the good guys, and then every once in a while, there's a Butch and Sundance situation where you're rooting for the bad guys all the way through, but you're never rooting for the good guys to catch them. This is... you did quite a masterful job of balancing that.
It's really like a dialectic. These two trains are, you know, they're going to intersect. And when you're on one train, you're riding that train, and the other train, you're riding the other. And that was the challenge of it. And that's what made it exciting. And that same kind of excitement is there. The ambition was to have the same kind of excitement there in the novel. But what it proceeds from is very interesting. It has the first time I spent some significant time with criminals or convicts or cops or, you know, and you realize that you have been naive, that your ideas of who they are and what their lives are formed by derivative dramas that you've seen in movies or television, And in fact, life is as complex as it is for everybody else. It's dimensional. So then my job becomes to mine that and try to understand it, because everybody is somebody else's brother or father or son or sister. The professional thief I based Thief on, John Santucci, would constantly talk to me about his marital problems. And they were middle class than anybody else, except he had two families. That made it a little bit more difficult.
So you're in Italy right now. You're working on Ferrari. We met in your office several years ago. Three, four years ago. I think that was before Ford v. Ferrari came out, which you were executive producer on. And I know that was your story and something you were honchoing for many, many years. And I know you've been working on Ferrari for many years as well. How long have you been working on Ferrari, the movie?
A long time. Sidney Pollack and I started on it together. And there's only one. I've been involved in some projects. If they can get together in 90 days, terrific. If not, you forget about them. So what keeps one involved isn't just a stubborn insistence. It's the other thing that keeps you involved. And that is that there's a nucleus to the story that's so good that, you know, it just sustains and just holds you. And every time you think, do I really want to get involved? And you read the screenplay again, you go, wow, this is great. And the nucleus was written on Ferrari by a man who I knew quite well, Troy Kennedy Martin. I did some additional writing after the fact, but he really created the gold that's at the center of it. And it's a fabulous, totally unexpected human drama about an innovative genius leading an amazingly complex life, all of which comes into collision in 3 months in the summer of 1957. So it's not a biopic. It's only 3 months in 57. And with a deathly race that happened called the Mia Media, which is 1,000 miles across open roads. And, so when you hit these unique pieces of content, after having, engaged in and passing on all kinds of other stuff, they just stick with you. You know, the Ferrari story stuck with me. The relationship of, Hannah and what happens with Chris Hurlis. There's a conceit in Heat, something that's made up, that I decided that what happened to these characters would be a function of how they think the world works. And so Neil McCauley deviates from that disciplined risk versus reward, no attachments, and it undoes him. Christian Hurlis has no concept like that whatsoever. He's kind of postmodern, and Ashley Judd should just turn him in. It'd be better for her son, better for their son, better for her. And he smiles at her, and she just gives him that blackjack dealer's thing with her hand, and he gets a pass. He just seems to land on his feet, and so that the way though that's what happened to these characters. That's how these this what why that determines what happens to these characters, and then kind of continue that through into what happens in the novel with a whole range of other characters as well.
Do you have more ideas than you have time to execute them?
Yes.
And is it just sort of you're walking around all day sort of nursing a head full of ideas and, oh, this would be a great idea for a project and that would be, I know the feeling a little bit, because when you make documentaries, you hear a story and you go, that would be a great idea for a documentary. And then you see some other shiny object and go, no, that would be, and then you go, I want to do them all. And you have to kind of pick and choose and figure out, your time. And can you ever shut it off? Can you go on vacation and just sit on the beach, or do you have to have a pad and the pen next to you all the time? And then people look at that as plagued or burdened. But on the other hand, maybe it's the ultimate freedom. You're just kind of doing what you want all the time. But can you shut it off and get away from it?
With great difficulty. Like I said, I'll get away from it. Like if I get the flu or virus, then you're just laid up. You get a day of absolute, you know, you don't care what's going on. But no, I mean, there's, you know, Mark Bowden wrote a brilliant book called Way 1968, which I want to do. You know, there's a science fiction project, there's distant future that I really love to do. So there's way more things that I want to do than I think one could do in one's lifetime.
Was Miami Vice, the TV show, was that, I guess we call it the big break, or what was going on for you before Miami Vice, the TV show?
It obviously had a really huge impact, but not really. It was more that I had a lot of exactly the same kind of development that you're talking about. I wanted to tell this story about the Golden Triangle and this other story about what was going on in South America, which became Contragate, and had all these things I was developing as movies. And then all of a sudden, we get to do 22 hours a year of content. And for the first 2.5 years when I was really active in it, I was able to just exploit all of that content and say, well, let's do a two-part episode called Golden Triangle on the Golden Triangle. And then let's do the Contras and the CIA thing. And so we did something that actually aired on a Friday before Hasenfuss got shot down, which then opened up Contragate. And then why don't we cast G. Gordon Liddy in a guest role, we did. And, you know, so that's one of the things it was. But I had I started writing television a little bit earlier in the middle 70s. And Bill Blinn created Starsky and Hutch, but the pilot aired a year earlier. I wrote what wound up being the first 4 or 5 episodes of it. And then from there, I went to Police Story, which did exactly the same kind of work that produced Heat 2, where it was all based on real events. You talk to, you know, to the real people. And then I became a hot enough television writer so I could extort a directing gig. And then I directed one movie the week, The Jericho Mile, which won some DGA and Emmy awards. And that was that enabled me to launch Thief, which I had already written. That was the big game plan, but I had failed to figure out what happens after the first feature. So,
well, now a word from our sponsor, BetterHelp. There are many ways to support your healthy brain. Learn a new language, take power naps, get some exercise. There's also BetterHelp online therapy. Look, it's so important, especially in this day and age, young, old, whoever you are, you need some therapy to really make things make sense. And then it'll help every other facet of your life. BetterHelp online therapy, offering video, phone, and even live chat, only therapy sessions. So you don't have to see anyone on camera if you do not want to. More affordable than in-person therapy. Get matched with a therapist in under 48 hours. And again, get your head right. And then you can go off and conquer the world. Our listeners get 10% off their first month at BetterHelp.com/Corolla. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Corolla. I was thinking about this yesterday because I was thinking about Ferrari, and I know you've been talking about it thinking about it for probably 20 years plus.
Right.
It's crazy. So I have many, many questions, but I was thinking that in Miami Vice, they drove a Ferrari Daytona and then they switched to a Testarossa at a certain point, right. I think. So they're both Ferraris. So I was like, well, maybe Michael's always been a Ferrari guy, even if he didn't know he was going to make a movie about Ferrari. Or they were just cool, flashy cars to drive around in Miami in the 80s.
No, I was the very first decent paycheck I got, I spent on a 308 in 1979. And bought it in Belgium, complied it. gray market and then took everything off it again and ran high compression pistons in it. And no, I mean, I knew what Ferraris were well before Miami Vice.
Yeah. So for those of you who aren't car people, they had back then, they would have the European spec, which was always more compression, less smog compliance, smaller bumpers, all the stuff you want, all the cool stuff. And they're just better, but they would have to, they're called gray market cars, and they'd have to make them compliant to bring into the U.S. And then probably Rain Man probably has that scene with Tom Cruise at the beginning where he's at the warehouse with all the Ferraris, and they're trying to bring them in and get them spec, get them smogged. That was the whole thing in the 70s and 80s and beyond. But so here's a philosophical question for you, Michael Mann. Certain things come together and they just flow and you're up and running in no time. And then certain things like Ferrari, 20 years in the making for you, maybe more. How do you know what stuff to hang on to and what stuff to let go? Because it is a business where you do have to walk away from things at a certain point when it's clear the cosmos aren't accepting it. But then sometimes you hang on to something, and here you are in Italy in production after 20 years. Here you are. So it was good that you hung on. And how do you decide?
You decide. You get in a quiet place, or go to a coffee shop or a bar or someplace, and you do the basic. You read the screenplay. And it'll rock you or not, and it's there's something human and powerful in a story, and your commitment is just absolutely reignited. It never diminished on Ferrari because it says things about life that dramas don't do. And it's not packaged. It's not, nothing works out the way you expect it to work out or that you see in stereotypical dramas. And it resonates with the way we are and the lives we live and the emotions we have and the irreconcilable conflicts that go on all the time. And when it hits that nerve, you just stick with it. This is also a very funny movie, Ferrari. His humor and wit and strategy is fascinating. And that's the same thing with I keep going back to Heat. It's the same thing with Heat and the Heat 2 novel. They're real lives, and they're exciting and contradictory and raw, and it takes you into worlds you haven't seen and experienced. And so that's what hooks me in. I'm not interested in seeing the third iteration of a conventional film. I'm excited when I'm in a new world, and that's whether that's 1957 or 1757 in Mohicans, or 1988 or 2008.
The chapter in Ferrari's life you're talking about, I don't want to give away too much, but it is out there historically, which is the Mille Miglia. There was a crash. Spectators were killed. Drivers were killed, I guess. And he was brought up on manslaughter charges, I think, in his own country of Italy. Is that correct?
Yeah, he went happy at Di Portago. It's a 1,000-mile race across open roads, bad roads, in through cities in Italy, and it was the biggest race every year. It's kind of Italy's Le Mans, and a very charismatic Spanish racer named Alfonso Di Portago, very romantic character. Tyrone Power left Rita Hayworth for an actress named Linda Christian. She left Tyrone Power for Fon Di Portago.
Wow. You leave Tyrone Powers for somebody. That guy's got it.
There was a kind of a glass marble eye in the road. It was broken, and his tire hit it, and the car catapulted into on a rural road into a bunch of people, and 9 people got killed. He got as well as he got killed. He was going about 140, 150 miles an hour when it happened. And then Italy being Italy, somebody has to be at fault. You got to blame somebody. And so he was blamed, and there was a court case that lasted. It was totally exonerated by name, but it took a couple of years.
Did Ferrari have a sense of humor? He's always played or portrayed in these movies as the
totally.
The big guy, you know, in Ford v Ferrari. He was that guy, you know. He's always such a serious guy. Is portrayed in any movie or even beyond I've ever seen him portrayed in. Is very serious with a scowl on his face and a perfectionist, and nothing is ever good enough. But people forget he had a son, Dino, who died at a young age. He had some loss. He tried to bring his wife into the factory and kind of get things squared away with her. But the sense of humor part, I never hear about.
He was strategic about everything, and there's tongue in cheek humor, there's sarcasm, there's a strifing wit. Operating with him when he wrote a novel, he wrote his autobiography. He called it "My Terrible Joys." There's melodrama with him. His first ambition was to be an opera singer, then a sports writer, then a race car driver, which he was in the 1920s. Ironic, sarcastic. It's a completely different world.
Yeah, it's interesting. I've never would have known that. He just sort of became this caricature, and then everyone sort of based him on a caricature of this perfectionist who was always in a bad mood. And I never saw the fun side of him. And again, I don't know, his son died maybe at 27 or something. His son died at a young age, which must have impacted him pretty deeply.
Yeah, Dino died of muscular dystrophy I think he was 20, 25 or 26 in 1955. And meanwhile, he has 2 families. He has an illegitimate son named Piero, who's 12, and very, very complex life. It is very much. Modern essay. It's very much based in Modena. It's a different life than you'd live if you were in Milan or Bologna, which is only 45 minutes away. And it's
Piero. We interviewed Piero for the 24-hour war, which is our Ford versus Ferrari doc. We did. Right. I think interesting guy, still around. Is it? So movies in Hollywood, it's sort of cyclical. Like, you know, Ron Howard's Rush came out, and the Niki Lauda story, and that was a very interesting movie, well done, and it did well, was well received. So then Ford v Ferrari came out, and now Hollywood is kind of going, okay, a car movie or something about Carroll Shelby or Ferrari, like. It's sort of cyclical that way. And Brad Pitt has just signed up for a new F1 project that seems to be big. Right. Does it seem like we're moving toward the light as car guys? Because Hollywood doesn't have car guys per se, but if they're making money and things are successful, they will make more of these themed movies.
Right. Well, I mean, before Ford Ferrari, no race car movie ever made a profit.
Mm-hmm.
And my theory was that it's because they didn't have very good stories.
Right.
And I love a lot of things, but it doesn't mean that they're entitled to become a cinematic, a narrative, that they're entitled to become a movie. It's because I like them. So what was fascinating about Ford Ferrari was that there's a great story, and the conflict you know, between Carroll Shelby and Ken Miles and Henry Ford II. It was just a classical, great drama. And I always felt the same way about something, you know, deeper about what was going on inside the life of Enzo Ferrari in this, in these 3 months of this, you know, fevered 3 months of 1957. And I think that's, you know, I think so anyway, that's why we're going. But Ford Ferrari really kind of broke the pattern because it did very well.
Yeah, the story was there with Rush as well, but I think you're right. I think when people make car or racing movies, they think it's about the car. And you always have to have the story, which is something you've masterfully captured career.
Yeah, I think it's got to work. Let me put it this way. You have to be able to subtract the cars and they have a great story and a great film. And that's the test.
What are some of the films you've enjoyed the most over the years, speaking of other people's stuff?
Well,
are there series that you're enjoying now? That I mean, TV's come a long way. There's a lot of good stuff that's on right now. It used to be a bigger division between television and theatrical stuff. Now they're bringing it all to all the streaming services.
Yeah, no, there's so much great stuff on. I mean, Succession is fantastic. It's, you know, particularly Brian Cox again, and you know, the writing, and it there's no attrition. It's just excellent. It just keeps at the same. It's fantastic level. There's a lot of good stuff out there.
I'll buy you a few seconds and tell you that Brian Cox was the original Hannibal Lecter, and I loved him in that role. I just thought, I'd never seen the guy act before. I was pretty young. I think Manhunter must have been, I don't know, 87, 86, 87, somewhere.
87, yeah.
87 yeah. In there. And it was a young Brian Cox. And he was so subtle. And he was not like Anthony Hopkins. He played it much more subdued way, but made him a lot more interest. It was much more nuanced. It was less theatrical, but it made it a little more interesting for me. Did you discover Brian Cox, so to speak?
No, there's a great story behind that. Brian Dennehy was an actor, was a very, very close friend of mine. He wanted to play Lecter and I was kind of settled on him, and I got a call from New York saying, "Look, I'm going to prove to you what kind of a great friend of yours I am." He said, "You know how much I want to do Lecter." I said, "Yeah." He said, "Well, there's somebody who's better. There's a play in New York called Rat in the Skull, and there's a British actor in it called Brian Cox, and he's fantastic." And he turned me on to Brian Cox, and kind of sacrificed playing it himself.
Dennehy was the sheriff in the first Blood, for those of you who are curious who Dennehy is.
Right. Yeah, and he was in the first dramatic thing I did, this movie The Week to Jericho Mile. He basically we met. He had a big role, starring role in that. So that was how I came on to Brian Cox, and then Tom Noonan playing Hannibal Lecter was a revelation through Bonnie Timmerman and, you know, casting, and then I put Tom Noonan as Kelso in a wheelchair in Heat on a hilltop just above the Five, overlooking East LA. Looking downtown, and that character endures in a way. He intercepts microwave signals and is kind of an early savant of computer and signal traffic, intercepting it. And he continues to have, by the way, a big role in Heat 2. And I still use Tom Noonan, so take him from Heat back to Manhunter into Heat 2, and you know, kind of retain these connections.
Well, I know we have a limited amount of time with you, Michael, so I won't keep you longer than the next 30 seconds or so. But Heat 2, a novel, is available now on Amazon, wherever you find finer books as well. And, get caught up on Michael Mann stuff if you haven't seen a lot of his movies or some of his movies. They're all great. And I'd love to talk to you when you come back in town after shooting the Ferrari movie. And congratulations, because I know it's something you've been working on for so many years, and it's just nice when it finally comes together.
Great. Well, thanks so much. I really appreciate it, Adam. I know you're a car guy and everything else, and I really appreciate being here and talking to you.
Thank you, Michael. We'll talk soon. The great Michael Mann, everybody. Jordan Harbinger, a different kind of sponsor for this episode. It's the Jordan Harbinger Show. If you're a fan of fascinating podcasts, and you are because you're listening to me, well, you should definitely check Jordan's out. There's an episode for everyone, no matter what you're into. Jordan will talk to Scott Adams about persuasion in a world where facts don't matter, or go inside the dark world of wildlife trafficking. You'll always find something helpful and useful that you can use, like routine changes to boost productivity or slight mindset tweaks. You can change the way you see the world. We enjoy the show, and you will too. Search for the Jordan Harbinger Show. That is H-A-R-B as in boy, I-N as in Nancy, G-E-R. You get that on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to finer podcasts. It is the Jordan Harbinger Show. Yeah, for those of you out there, like I said, I bring up Manhunter for now and again. Just go find that movie. A lot of you guys picked it up at Silence of the Lambs. Silence of the Lambs is 92. I kind of remember I was living in an apartment in Santa Monica at the time with a roommate I hated, but this is like 91. So everyone picks it up with Jodie Foster and Anthony Hopkins in 91. But if you go back to 87, you'll get Brian Cox. Now, you guys all love him in Succession. Young Brian Cox is the original Hannibal Lecter, was fucking fantastic. I mean, how often does that happen? Brian Dennehy, the guy who's dying to play Hannibal Lecter, goes, I got a guy who's better than me for that role. It's just so good. He's so diabolical. As a matter of fact, when they came out with the next one and they had Anthony Hopkins in it, I was like, ah. I mean, everyone loved it. It was a revelation for everyone else. But for me, I was like, nah, I like Brian Cox better. The other thing they did, Michael Mann's version of Hannibal Lecter, is they actually put him in a facility versus a cave. Like, in the Silence of the Lambs, he was housed in a cheese cave. I don't know many facilities that the government runs that have stalactites hanging from the fucking ceiling. Like, I get it. They're theatrical license, but they don't hold guys in caves and transport them on refrigerator dollies in straitjackets. It was all kind of a jack-off. I know everyone loves it, but go watch. Go watch the original. It's weird. It's like a federal prison. They don't put you in a dungeon. It's a prison. If you look at the first one, it was just white. Everything was like kind of sterile. It was like a normal building they went into. Anyway, watch the original Manhunter. Please, based on, I guess, the novel, maybe the whatever dragon, the red dragon? Also try to figure that one out. Am I right? Yeah. Yeah. Deep dive, right? You guys have not seen this movie. Nobody's seen this movie. It's a good one. It's got a little 80s cheese on it, just a little kind of Michael Mann, kind of Miami Vice kind of vibe to it.
Yeah, there's a little dusting of that.
Little dusting of that, but a good story and an interesting story. So there you go. Once again, Heat 2, a novel, Michael Mann. Poor guy has more ideas than he has time, and I get it. That can be taxing on a man's head. All right, so till next time, this is Adam Carolla for Michael Mann saying mahalo.
Make sure you get a copy of Adam's new book, Everything Reminds Me of Something, Advice, Answers, But No Apologies. The hard copy and audiobook are available wherever finer books are sold. Leave us a voicemail at 888-634-1744 and get your tickets to see The Ace Man. Get them right now at adamcarolla.com.
You own, you rent your home? Sure you do. And it can be hard work. You know what's easy? Bundling your policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you have so much to do already around your home. Why not make it easy? Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see just how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com.
All month long, the biggest movies are streaming free on Pluto TV's Popcorn Summer Movies. Watch star-studded blockbusters like Titanic and Transformers Revenge of the Fallen. Or fall in love with charming rom-coms like Hitch and How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days. The best part? Pluto TV is 100% free. No credit cards, not even a sign-up. Plus, Pluto TV has hundreds of channels with thousands more movies, TV shows, and more. Download the Pluto TV app on all your favorite devices and start streaming now. Pluto TV. Drop in. Watch free.